Good morning, welcome back to the Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 8th parak of Shmuel Aleph. This is the chapter where there's a changeover really in the governance of Israel. You see, Shmuel is now getting old, and the Tanakh tells us that although his oldest son was Yoel, he had another son called Avia, and they lived in Be'er Sheva in the south. But v'loy holchu bonav bidrachov, they didn't really go in his ways. Vayitu acharei habotza, and they went after, this sounds like they're going after money. Vayikra shoychad vayatu mishpat, and they perverted justice because of this. Very sad description, certainly considering that Shmuel replaced Chofni and Pinchas, who were not going in the ways of their father, Eli. So in response to this, the people come to get to Shmuel and they say to Shmuel, insensitive kind of comments to make, but they come to him and say, look, Shmuel, your sons, you're old, your sons aren't going in your way. You know what? We have a solution. Give us a king. Give us a king to judge us. And Shmuel's response was to daven to Hashem. Shmuel was so taken aback by this that he didn't even respond to them. He just turned to Hashem to daven. And Hashem says, Shmuel, don't worry. You can tell them about the king. It's not you they're despising. They're not trying to kick you out. It's me. They're finding fault with me, God. But, and so Hashem says, you know what? You can tell them, but just tell them what a king does. What's called mishpat hamelech. Tell them what's really involved with a king. So Shmuel comes back to the people and he says to them, You know, you want a king. Let me just explain to you just exactly what kings do. So, well, a king, if he wants anybody, he can take your children just for his service. And they're going to be, you know, do his missions, you know, just like that. Conscript them for whatever job he wants. He can use them in the army. He can use them for menial jobs. He's going to take your daughters and just decide to use them for, put them in his factories for whatever. His baking or cooking or whatever jobs he wants them to do. And he can put them in the fields and make them his servants. You can have fields, you can have produce, and he's just going to take it when he wants to it. You have good workers, he'll take them as well. Your flock, he'll take that too. And you're going to call back on that day, and you're going to say, "Ay, ay, ay, why do we choose this king?" And Hashem's going to say, "You chose him." So that's what Shmuel says. That was his speech, his presentation, what's called in later terminology, the section in Tanakh called Mishpat HaMelech, the laws of kings. The people weren't so keen on listening to Shmuel. And they said, no, we'll have a king. We'll take a king. We'll take one of those. And we'll be like the rest of the nations. You'll judge us and you'll fight our battles. So Shmuel listened and he spoke, returned their response to Hashem. And Hashem said, okay, you can have a king. And go find that king. The people return to their houses, and the plot ends. This is now this moment before the jump into the precipice of the next stage of kingship. This is a critical moment of change in Jewish history. This is the end of the parak, where there's a shift from what's been up till now, shoftim, and now really kingship. It is interesting just to note in the irony over here is that the difference between a shofet and a king, one of the bigger differences is continuity. It's interesting because Shmuel does not have continuity, at least in the way that people want to expect it, that they're asking for a king. Meaning to say they feel that Shmuel's lacking is his children. So therefore they want to have a king who's going to have children, who are going to have a continued, what's called a dynasty. Now the irony is that if you have a king and his children aren't fitting, that just means to say you're stuck with kids who aren't fitting. So that's the irony of this whole business. But nonetheless, this is where what's starting to happen here. This parak is chock full with lots of things to think about. Number one is just how long did Shmuel actually lead? How long was Shmuel really in the seat of power for? So the Rashi tells us in the first parak, if you go back all the way back, to Perek Aleph, Shmuel, Rashi does the calculations for us, and he points out that it was really 13 years that Shmuel led, because we know that that Shmuel lived to 52 years old, and we know that that Eli judged for 40 years, and Shmuel's ostensibly born in the second year or of Eli's judging, being a judge, and therefore it left with him 13 years of rulership, which is interesting because that doesn't mean to say that Shmuel had an awfully long time before he was out of the service or before he was being rejected by the people, but this just puts things in perspective, how much he was able to achieve in that time. What does it really mean that Shmuel's sons did not go in his footsteps? You know, how bad was that? So right, the Radak says, yeah, one option is like, yes, absolutely. They really sinned. They really went off the roads and this off the derech, and that really shows you just how much we are really not in control. We try as best as we can to form our children, to shape them, to guide them. Sometimes we're just under the control of what the decisions they make in their life. The Radak's second opinion, which is followed by the Malbim, is that no, on a deeper level, it wasn't that they ran after money and they perverted justice. What it really means is that they weren't as excited as Shmuel was about running around all of Israel. Remember, Shmuel's whole uniqueness was that he had his place in Ramah, but he used to walk from town to town, from city to city, and judge people in their place. They set up shop in Be'er Sheva, and they said, whoever wants to judge us comes to us. Now, in all fairness, that's a pretty all right setup, but at the same time, that means to say that it shifts the dynamic of power, and that means to say that people are not going to be reached like Shmuel would have reached them. So in regards to Shmuel's leadership, they were perverting justice, meaning they were not exercising the full extent of what they were able to do, but it was more of complacency rather than of malintent. When we come to the Mishpat HaMelech, there's a famous question, you know, when Shmuel gives this whole speech about what kings do, is that really just to scare them? Is that something which a king can do, or is it something a king is allowed to do? So should and can do. So this actually happens to be a matter of debate in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. On Daf Chof, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that one opinion is Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Kol Eimer Parshas Melech Mutar Loi Rav Amar Loi Nemra Parshas Lu Ela La'ayim Aleihem. So one opinion says it is allowed, another one says no, this is just to terrify them. What do we paskin like? And this happens to be an interesting debate. The Rambam says we paskin that like Rabbi Yossi in the Gemara, the end of Gemara aligns with the Machlokes Tanaim, that it is a reshus, it is something which they are allowed to do, whereas the Rabbi Barnel comments that this doesn't sound like this. The kings should not be doing this kind of thing. We're going to see in general that the Rabbi Barnel is going to be moving against the idea of monarchy being a good thing, and he speaks from personal experience, having dealt with the king of Portugal and having negotiated with Isabella and Ferdinand in the early 1490s against the expulsion, and he is very against monarchy for that reason, as he moved to Venice and talks about democracy, which is to be found as a much better political system. Why were the people so enamored by this? Meaning, like, why did they accept this? So the Malbim says that, you know, they believed their king would listen to law and order. They said, yeah, our king will be a good one. Unfortunately, you know, that kind of response is often very short-lived. What was so bad about the request? Why was it that Shmuel felt it was a slap in his face and God felt it was a slap in his face? This is a very large topic which requires a lot of intricate thinking. The reason why this requires intricate thinking is because the Torah itself, in Parashas Shoftim, talks about how Santosim Alecha Melech, that you should place a king, and there's a debate, is that actually a mitzvah? And if it's a mitzvah, what are they doing wrong here? If it's a reshus, if it's an option that to place a king on you, then okay, so what went wrong here? It sounds like their request was almost identical to the way the Torah describes it. And so what went awry, what was different about this? This is a mega topic in Tanakh. All the Meforshim across the board, on the page, off the page, talk about this and what was perverted over here. It sounds like there was some military fear in the background. We're going to see after the king is appointed, immediately after that, there's going to be an attack from Nachash, Melech Ammon, which means to say there was an impending military disaster, and therefore the reason they were asking for a king was not for the sake of having a divine agent on earth, but rather as a way of getting, they felt that Shmuel was not in his old age as strong as he was before, which means to say that their attitude was wrong, but that's in general terms, that's where Rav Hirsch says on the Torah. For more details on this, I would really highly encourage you, there's a long shir, two shirim I've given on this particular subject, and they can be found on Nachnuk under the deeper, the in-depth courses. Also on YU Torah, they are under the section called Quest for the Crown, which is the sheer series in depth on this particular section. But suffice to say, the people were not doing this altruistically. There was something a little wrong with what they are doing. What wrong is the debate, and it yields very different results as to what was really going on here. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.